Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral Campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, we should resolve to think about these things. That's what St. Paul tells us. And don't you think we should talk about them too? Well, that is certainly what we do on Call Me Catholic, and I hope St. Paul would approve. I am Peggy Normandin, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, a light and lively hour of conversation intended to affirm, explore, and celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times. So you can wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh yeah, you can call me Catholic. And guess who's in the studio with me today? Jimmy G, of course.
Surprise, surprise.
Where would I be without my trusty engineer and chief fact checker? Are you staying dry? We have had some rain.
It has been just absolutely a drench at my house. Yeah. Yours too?
Yeah, I think all over. Pretty damp all over. Today is a beautiful, glorious day. We can see the mountains with the snow on them. You know, I think a lot of our listeners in other parts of the country are thinking, why are they always talking about the weather? And I'll tell you why, because we almost never get weather. And this winter, we've had us some weather. And I love it, personally.
Well, I'm hearing stories about some of these areas where the water level's just been dangerously low have actually started filling up again.
We are getting out of our drought.
Yeah.
Thanks be to God.
Yeah.
Hey, Jimmy G and I are coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope on the beautiful Christ Cathedral campus in Orange County, California. We're snuggled in there between Los Angeles and San Diego in the Southland of California. We are the Diocese of Orange, and we have a new bishop as of this week.
That's right.
Habemus Bishop. We had a little white smoke coming out
of
the Tower of Hope. No, congratulations to Bishop Timothy Fryer on his ordination, or consecration, we can call it both. We are blessed, most blessed to have him as one of our good shepherds in this growing diocese. We have an embarrassment of riches here.
He was on with us about a month ago, wasn't it?
Yes,
yeah.
Along with our key bishop. Yeah, so
it's now
official. And we have a new president as well. Congratulations to President Donald J. Trump. That was quite a glorious inauguration yesterday. The setting there on the West Lawn of the Capitol building with all the American flags ablaze. I mean, that was just like so iconically and beautifully American. I really loved it. And all the living presidents sitting there with their wives in dignified respect for this traditional transfer of power. All of them, I have to say, except for George H.W. Bush.
That's right. That's
who
right.
is watching it on TV, I understand, feeling well enough to watch it on TV, although he is in the hospital. And we wish him a speedy recovery. Our prayers are with you. President Bush, we love your family, and we're sorry you couldn't make it. We'd love to have seen you there. But President Carter was there with his mm-hmm. wife. I mean, mm-hmm. God bless him, coming down the stairs with a smile on his face. That was quite stunning, really. I was absolutely so proud, bursting my American buttons on this. And I hope Americans who are watching the swearing in of our 45th president of the United States did not take for granted what we have achieved here in this country, a civilized democracy, one nation under God. And, hey, God was not a forgotten player in yesterday's inauguration. There were six religious leaders who spoke at the ceremony, unprecedented. Never had that many before. We had three invocations and three benedictions.
Huh.
Cardinal Timothy Dolan sort of started the game up. He was the first up. He read from the Book of Solomon, beseeching God for wisdom for our new president.
Yeah.
Very appropriate. And then I liked Reverend Franklin Graham, Billy Graham's son.
Sure.
Boy, what a spitting image likeness that was,
yeah.
Even his demeanor. And that was very cute how he said that rain is a blessing from God. And the minute President Trump started to deliver his inaugural address, the rain started to come down. I thought that was kind of cute. But, you know, I got to tell you who stole the show. I thought it was Bishop Wayne Jackson with his final benediction, kind of just Helen Brimstone. That was absolutely beautiful. He was calling on the name of Jesus with verve and passion. He was quoting Mahalia Jackson,
practically
singing, "Oh, deep in my heart, I do believe the Lord will see us through." Love that gospel stuff. Very, very powerful. So it was a beautiful day to watch. I was just glued to the television, enjoying every minute of it, and just once again, so proud to be an American and an American Catholic. Also on our nation's agenda this month is the March for Life in Washington, D.C., which is next weekend. And in fact, the West Coast Walk for Life is this weekend up in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. EWTN will be bringing you some live coverage of that this afternoon with Joey and Jim Pinto are up there. And they'll be talking to the walkers and talking to the speakers and talking to all the different people participating in that walk of life, the West Coast Walk for Life. So stay tuned for more of that. In recent history, January has always been a month that we set aside for the public discussion of the sanctity of life issues. And January 23rd will be the 44th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, a very sobering opportunity to be vocal and demonstrative in our efforts to defend life from conception to natural death and help enlighten others on the truth of this issue. Sometimes we have to choose our words very carefully, but it's an important message and it needs to be said. So toward that end, today on Call Me Catholic, I'd like to recognize one of the most dedicated and proactive pro-life voices in our Catholic Church, the Knights of Columbus. Good Knights of Columbus. They are awesome. This is a fraternal organization within the church, actually the largest fraternal organization within our church, founded in 1882 by Father Michael McGivney to help support those who could not support themselves. Very interesting history. We're going to explore the fascinating background of the Knights and how they evolved into the tremendous service organization that they are today. We have a guest with us who will actually a dignitary from the Knights of Columbus. He's going to shed some light, enlighten us on this subject. He's in our studio. He is the president. Jim Brucken is his name. He is the president of the Orange County chapter of the Knights, 9,000 members strong. Unbelievable. Here in our region of Orange County, we have 9,000 Knights of Columbus. Unbelievable. So Jim Brucken will be on board in just a minute to talk to us about that. And then in Chatting with Catholics, I take my microphone to a gathering of Knights and I ask him to share a little bit about what drew them to this most excellent Catholic fraternity. But first, the first bit of our show business is the Call Me Catholic countdown of the week. And today, because we're all about the Knights of Columbus, I'm going to list my top five favorite celebrity Knights of Columbus.
I thought you were going to say pancakes.
No, my top five favorite pancakes? Wake up, Jimmy G. Did
Blueberry,
you not eat this morning?
Pancake toppings.
Chocolate chip. No, we all know a Knight of Columbus, I'm sure. My husband is a Knight. Yep, my nephew yep. Trey in Atlanta is a Knight. But maybe you didn't know about these famous people who are proud to call themselves, or sometimes in this case, were proud to call themselves a Knight of Columbus. So here we go. My top five favorite celebrity Knights of Columbus.
The Call Me Catholic Countdown.
A little slow on that one. Okay.
Sounds like, yeah. I like.
You're still thinking of pancakes, Jimmy G. Mm. Okay, number five on my list is Jeb Bush. Yeah, Jeb Bush. He was one of our presidential candidates this year. He was baptized Episcopal, but he converted to Catholicism about 20 years ago. I believe his wife is Catholic, and he is proud to call himself a Knight of Columbus.
Wow.
Yeah. His demeanor speaks of the Knight of Columbus. He is dignity and grace, and he's a good man. So that is my number five on my list. Number four is Mike Ditka, coach of Da Bears. Coach of Da Bears.
Coach Mike.
Yeah. He is the only college and professional football Hall of Famer, the only figure in NFL history to win a Super Bowl for the same team as both player and coach. Did you know that?
Interesting.
And maybe it's because he's a Knight. You know, he brings those blessings with him wherever he goes.
I've always liked, I've got one of his old football cards with a cool haircut. It's really cool.
Cool haircut. He has good hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got good hair.
It's that Midwestern hair. Yeah. Okay, number three on my list of celebrity Knights is Jerry Orbach. Now, do you know who Jerry Orbach is?
Put me on the spot.
I am a theater buff. I love musical theater. And he is a song and dance man from Broadway. I mean, he's got a great history of performance on Broadway. But the audience may know him more familiarly from his role on Law & Order. He was a very familiar character on Law & Order, one of the cops. And God rest his soul, he has passed away a couple of years ago. Mm. But he was a good Knight of Columbus. I think that's awesome. You would definitely recognize him. Tall, lanky guy.
I'm sure I would. I'm sure I would.
If you saw him tap dance, then you'd say, ah, that's what you're talking about.
That's what he did on Law & Order, tap dance?
He did tap dance his way through a few cases. Okay, number two on my list of celebrity Knights of Columbus would be President John Kennedy.
Ah.
Isn't that interesting? Only Catholic president of the United States. He joined the Knights back in 1946, just at the beginning of his political career. In fact, on his application to the Knights of Columbus, he listed his profession as correspondent. Who knew? Who knew? Okay, and this one's dedicated to you now, Jimmy G. The number one, my number one favorite celebrity. Yeah, I've got. You're looking at me with great curiosity.
Drum roll.
Knight of Columbus is Babe Ruth.
Babe Ruth.
Babe Ruth. Yeah, Bambino. Il Bambino. Isn't that what they called him?
George Herman Babe Ruth.
Yeah. Didn't they call him the Bambino?
They did.
Yeah. Okay. So he joined a Boston chapter of the Knights back when he was playing for the Red Sox. And true to the charitable mission of the Knights, Ruth helped found a hospital for children and established a foundation to aid poor and orphan children. He's a good guy. Colorful character.
The Sultan of Swat.
There you go. See, I knew you'd get off of pancakes as soon as I mentioned Babe Ruth.
Give me baseball and I'll give
you
some.
I know. It's your favorite subject. So I put that one in there for you. So there you have it. Our top five favorite celebrity nights of Columbus. Of course, they're not my favorite overall nights. My favorite night is my husband and maybe our guest, Jim Brucken, who is president of the Knights of Columbus in Orange County. And he's going to talk to us about the Knights in just a minute. So stay with us. And hey, listen, if you are close to a computer, you can watch our show live. Any interest in doing that, friends?
Really?
Yeah, you can not only listen, you can watch. Go to our Facebook page.
Awesome.
Facebook.com/callmecatholic. And you click on a link there, and it will take you to a live streaming of the show. Kind of fun, don't you think?
That is awesome. It really is cool.
Yeah, or just check out our Facebook page whenever you get a chance. And give us a like. We got lots going on there, and we love hearing from you. In fact, today we're having a little trouble with our phones. So if you have some questions that you'd like to pose to our guest or to me, you can post it up there on our Facebook page. Facebook.com/callmecatholic. Or you can send us an email to callmecatholic@ewtn.com. Or you can just listen to us. No obligation. But whatever you do, don't go anywhere because we've got lots of show left. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Celebrating, exploring, and restoring our Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome back to Call Me Catholic. I am Peggy Normandin, as the announcer said, and today we are celebrating the great work of the Knights of Columbus, especially relevant, I think, during the month of January when we actively demonstrate and vocalize our defense of the unborn. The Knights are such faithful and zealous defenders of the dignity of human life. So I'd like to introduce to you a great dignitary we have from the Knights in our studio today, Jim Brucken, who is president of the Orange County chapter of Knights. Welcome to Call Me Catholic, Jim.
I am so happy to be here. This is really a thrill. I've known you, Peggy, for a long time, and this is very exciting for me to be here.
Well, I have to say, you look so handsome and dignified. You have your Knights of Columbus shirt on and your name badge, but I was kind of hoping you'd bring in, you'd wear the feathered cap and the color guard and all that stuff.
Well, that is a different little aspect of the Knights, and that's a very colorful aspect of the Knights, and we call that the color guard, and they wear their uniforms, and we go to funerals, and we go to ceremonies, and we honor the bishop, and we honor the priests, and what it does is it gives us a little bit of distinction when we're in an area, and I am not color guard. I'm going to be someday because I want to do it all.
Well, what do you have to do to become a color guard? I mean, that's a special designation, a special privilege or responsibility?
Yes. In the Knights of Columbus, there are four different degrees. When you first join the Knights, you become first degree, then you go to second degree and third degree. And if you want to become a fourth degree Knight, that is where you become a color guard. And that's a little bit different group of Knights. And so if you become a fourth degree Knight, you can become a color guard. And it's very honorable. I have a bunch of friends that are color guards, and I'm very proud of them. And we go to the funerals, and we do a lot of things for the bishop. But
your button-down shirt with the embroidery, it's a little more practical. It's a little easier to go to the market in that, right?
Yeah. I'd feel funny wearing a sword into the market.
So, Jim, you've been a Knight of Columbus for 20 years, I think you told me.
Right.
What first drew you to the Knights, and has it lived out to your expectations, or exceeded, maybe?
Well, it's way more exceeded my expectations. I guess what really drew me into the Knights is I saw what the Knights of Columbus did to my dad, who was long gone, bless him. And he was a Knight, and I saw, I know a lot of people say this about their parents, but my dad was one great Catholic man.
Well, the apple does not fall far from the tree in this case.
Well, I think you do. You see that in your family, and that's one of the reasons I encourage men in all the churches in Orange County. We have 50 councils, 50 churches.
50 councils in Orange County. That's just amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. That's amazing. But what happens is when you get a Knight and they see how you live your life and how you act, it spreads. Mm-hmm. It not only spreads to your family, it spreads to your friends, it spreads to other men in the church that you go to, it spreads to people that you work with. It really does change your life. There's just something about being in the Knights of Columbus that just, it changes your life, and you become, I hate to say this because some people are going to say, oh, you're not a very good example. But I mean,
I'll knock them down.
Yeah. It really does open your eyes and let you know how you should be living today.
Well, Jim, you mentioned that your father modeled knighthood so well. How is what you, your memories of him being a knight different or the same from how you are, your ministry as a knight?
I think it's exactly the same.
Really the same thing.
Yeah, really the same. I mean, my dad was such a good Catholic man. He never missed Mass, and he was such a good man to his fellow workers and the neighbors. And, you know, and I think it's just, I encourage everyone to become a knight who's a Catholic man, because they will be shocked it in 6 months or 8 months how it will change their thinking and change their life. They'll be amazed.
Well, considering that this organization was established in 1882, that's
right.
A long time ago, and with all the sort of traditional practices of the faith that we used to have, it still is very powerful. A lot of the devotions, a lot of the traditions that we have, some of those have faded away. So it's interesting to me that the Knights continues to be so vibrant, so zealous, so present in parish life.
Right.
I mean, it must be the seeds and the foundation that were planted there that perpetuate its legacy.
Well, I think it is, because a lot of the men that become Knights, their dads were Knights. But mm-hmm. that doesn't mean, you know, you can't be a knight if your dad wasn't a knight, or you maybe didn't have a dad, or you didn't know who your dad was. Because I tell you what, you'll be such a great example for your families, your kids, your neighbors. I know a lot of people don't believe it, but when you see it happen, it's amazing.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the history, because it started, you know, back in 1882 in Connecticut by a priest named Father McGivney.
Right.
Who actually, we should mention, is up for sainthood right now. He's being considered for sainthood, and so that would make him a venerable right.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about what prompted him to begin this organization.
Well, he was in Connecticut, and he saw what was happening to the men back there, the Catholic men and the families, because a lot of them were being killed off. The men were being killed off, and the families with their kids were left with nobody. And so he started an organization which really kind of materialized into an insurance-type mm-hmm. organization, because what he was doing was he was trying to get as much money and help as he could to support the families of the parents that were – the father that was shot and killed.
And at that point in American history, the immigrants were coming over, and they were looking for work. A lot of them were left widowed. Mm-hmm. Life was hard, and they had no source to support themselves with.
No, exactly. That's where Father Michael J. McGivney started it, to help people that just the man was killed and didn't make it. And so he was helping the families. And really, that's where it all materialized from. And as you just mentioned, Peggy, he's up for being a saint. He's very close right now to being a saint. And he deserves it, because what he's done and how many people that he has influenced after all these years. I mean, when I think about my dad, my dad's friends yeah. who were knights, and now I'm a knight, I mean, it's...
Well, like I said, you know, when the foundation is so strong and so honest and so earnest, and I remember reading the story of how he was just so worried about these widows and orphans. How were they going to be taken care of? And this was in a time of history, too, when there was a lot of prejudice against Catholics. So Catholics themselves were sort of mistreated by a lot of the country. And so he just gathered some of the men of the parish into the parish basement. And he said, we've got to come up with a plan. We've got to come up with a plan to help these people. We can't leave them abandoned. And so it was the birth of this insurance program. And that's grown into a huge business for the Knights. And it's a source of income that they redistribute into charitable organizations.
That's right. Anytime there's a disaster, like there's a big disaster in the Philippines, and, you know, the Knights of Columbus, we go over there and we help so many people. We go over there with millions of dollars, actually, to try and regroup their country and get them back on their feet over there. And we do that all over the world. Wherever there's a problem, the Knights of Columbus shows up, and through the insurance program, they take the profits from that company mm-hmm. and they spread it around the world and helping people in need.
Yeah, I mean, last year I read that the Knights distributed $175 million in charitable donations and performed more than 74 million hours of service.
Yes, that's true.
And what are some of the other areas where they devote their service?
Well, just let me give you an example locally. We try and help mentally challenged people. Mm-hmm. And we put on a camp for them every year. You know, if you have children that are mentally disabled, you know, the parents are locked in every minute of every day. Yeah. So we give those parents a break, and we run three camps in the summer where the kids can come to the camp. We have nurses there. They're looked after every minute. They are not allowed out of anyone's sight, and they're watched all night long because you don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And then those parents that have those kids get a little break, a little vacation, so they can have a week or two here and there.
And they know their kids are having fun. They know their
exactly,
sons and daughters
exactly.
are having
fun. We also put on a big day of sharing where they all come and we feed them all and we have games for them. And it's amazing. That's just one aspect of what we do as the Knights, but it's just unbelievable. I mean,
have you seen your chapter here in Orange County grow just since you've been president? Or this is your first year being president?
This is my,
okay.
Yeah.
So has the chapter been growing in numbers?
Yeah, it's amazing. The growth of our Knights of Columbus here just in Orange County has been growing at a phenomenal rate because, I kind of have been a sales type person my whole life. So we're trying to spread a little sales personality to everybody so they know how to recruit new members.
Yeah.
And for example, there's one of the churches here in Orange County. Well, I started the council there, I think it was 4 years ago now. And now we got like 125 members there, and they're doing so much good at their church. And it's amazing.
Now, there's an age qualification. I think you meet it because you have to be 18 years old.
18, yes. I'm close to that.
Have they ever established any Knights divisions or chapters on college campuses for the guys?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, that's neat.
Oh, there's
there's
a lot of colleges that have a council. That's what we call one of the local groups, a council. So the council, we have them on campuses, and they're all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have a great one. For example, I'm originally from Ohio. They have a great one down at Ohio State University campus, and it's really exciting.
Well, you know, now that I think about it, I'm asking you this question when I probably have the answer, because our oldest son went to Gonzaga University, and he was involved, president one year, of a student organization of just men called the Knights. But they didn't call themselves the Knights of Columbus, and I wonder if that's a derivation of the Knights of Columbus that you put on campus.
Part of the same group.
Yeah, because
yes.
Oh, all right.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I wonder, so are they officially Knights of Columbus?
Yes.
Then?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So our oldest son is a Knight. I talked about my husband being a Knight of Columbus. I guess my oldest son is a Knight of Columbus. But here's a guy to recruit right here, Jimmy G.
Yeah, Jimmy G is not a Knight.
No, he's not a Knight yet. But
you're in the room with the right guy.
Oh, boy. He's giving me the eye.
You're not getting out of here without your credential, your knighthood credentials, Jimmy
G. We could make him 9,001.
9,001. We could make history right here. We'll swear him in.
I'm on the radio, too.
So, Jim, give him a pitch. How would you present to Jimmy G the concept of becoming a knight, making it appealing to him, appropriate for his lifestyle, beneficial to his spiritual well-being?
Here's kind of the way we make a pitch. Like, you know, we do it at masses. The priest is so welcoming. They let us get up on the altar after he does his announcements at the end of Mass. And one of the things that I like to say to every man in the church is, I give him my name. I'm Jim Brucken. I'm with the Knights of Columbus. The Knights of Columbus is an organization of Catholic men trying to walk in the footsteps of Jesus to help people in need and to support our church. And I usually get a lot of people looking, and then we always say at the end of Mass, we're going to be out in front afterwards, and we want to talk to you just for 1 minute. And the thing that I love the most is when a knight comes out and his wife is standing next to him, and we start talking to him about being a knight, and she's always tugging on his shirt going, "You're doing this. You're doing this." Because she can see there's going to be some improvement maybe in his life. So it's funny.
Okay, so how much is required of a knight? Is there a minimum service commitment?
Well, what we like to say is each council at each church has usually two meetings a month. And each meeting lasts maybe an hour, hour and 15 minutes or something like that. So what I tell them is when they say, you know, I just don't have time. I'm too busy. I'm working in my yard. I got my job. I can't do it.
Run the radio studio.
Yeah, I always tell them, you only have to give 1 hour a month.
Oh, okay.
So they come to one meeting a month, and what happens is they get hooked. All of a sudden, they're helping us in all these projects, you know, our Culture of Life program, which, you know, tries to save the babies that aren't given a chance to live.
Does save the babies. And we're going to get into that in a minute after the break.
But
that is a huge component of your work. And you do extremely constructive things. You don't just give lip service to these causes. I mean, you actually put your money where your mouth is and make a difference. All right, so are you convinced yet, Jimmy G?
You know, I've always been a big fan. Always. My life is just so scattered right now. But I know that's probably the story for so many men my age.
You know? Well, and I think the fraternal benefit, as you'll see in our Chatting with Catholics segment, when I take the microphone out and talk to a bunch of knights about what drew them to it. What drew them to it is one thing. Why they stay is I think they really enjoy the fellowship, the like-minded company of being with men who share their values and share their commitment to the church and, you know, are still guys, you know. So if you have a question or a comment that you'd like to pose, I suggest you go to our Facebook page. Since our phones are on the fritz today, I think it was the rain. Go to facebook.com/
It was the rain.
It's the rain. We can blame the rain on anything. My house is messy. It's the rain. Anyway, Call Me Catholic on the Facebook page and type it up there. And you can also check out the link that will put you right into a live streaming of our show so you can see the handsome company I'm keeping with Jimmy G and Jim Brucken, president of the Orange County chapter of the Knights of Columbus. Stay with us. I'm Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Helping you navigate the daily struggles and blessings of life. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to Call Me Catholic, where we are talking about and saluting the Knights of Columbus today on our show. I'm your host, Peggy Normandin, with one of the very distinguished and elevated Knights of Columbus here in the studio today. Jim Brucken is president of the Orange County chapter. You told me it's not chapter. It's called a...
Chapter.
Oh, it is a chapter. Okay. I thought you gave me a different word for it in the last segment. Okay. I've been right then. Okay. The Orange County chapter of the Knights of Columbus. And as such, oversees the programs and procedures of this 9,000 member chapter of the Knights. That is amazing. 9,000 members. That's just stunning. So I want to talk a little bit about the fact that it is specifically for men. I love the fact that it is not buckled to women. You know, I'm proud to be a woman, but I think there is a benefit that comes from men being just men together. And one of the things that I notice when my husband is part of something that's just a male group is that you kind of cut down to basics. You don't get distracted by lots of other frills and sort of amenities. Men are just kind of purists about, we are here to do some work. We're here to eat. Here's the food. You know, we're here to get this job done. So who's going to sign up? I love that. There's an efficiency to men when they form a union.
Yeah, but we do not exclude women. We have meetings. The meetings, you have to be a knight with a card, a current card, to come into a meeting because we want to make sure that all of our knights' information is kept within the group. And we do a lot of events where the women are involved because we want the...
involved.
Yeah.
Are you talking about mature women?
Involved. We want to make sure that the wives and we have events where the wives and the families are involved. You bring the kids and we have picnics and we have all kinds of things that we do.
So
we don't exclude the family. It's just for the meetings that we do that.
Yeah, no, you don't have to be defensive about it. Totally. I'm happy to send my husband off to these meetings. It's like it's a secret society. No, I mean, I think that men enjoy that aspect of it, actually, that it's this camaraderie. I mean, men face very specific and unique challenges in the world. Women face unique and specific challenges. And I think it's perfectly healthy to gather in same gender organizations.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have a problem with that at all. Hey, you know, so we want to, because our phones are down, we've been asking you to make comments on our Facebook page. And we got a comment from Chuck. Now, I don't know where Chuck is from, but he mentions that last Sunday was the March for Life in Chicago. Almost 5,000 people came out. And the Students for Life had a huge turnout as well. They are a pro-life generation, he says. Amen. You know what, Chuck? I totally agree with you. I think the younger generation get the pro-life message a lot better than the older ones do. And he was proud to march as a Knight of Columbus. So God bless you for that, Chuck. Isn't that awesome?
Awesome.
Yeah. So speaking of life issues, I specifically thought of the Knights today because in dealing with the sanctity of life, addressing those issues, I think the Knights have been so constructive in their contribution to this movement. Here in Orange County, what have you share with our listeners some of the things your council has
done? Well, one of the things specifically we have done with our chapter in the Knights of Columbus is we raise money to buy ultrasound machines. And as most women know and men know that, you know, if you're like 5 or 6 or 7 months advanced in pregnancy and you go in and you see the baby moving around on an ultrasound machine, a video of it, and you're looking at it, it kind of changes your opinion a little bit to continue having the baby. So we have bought a lot of ultrasound machines, and we work with a lot of organizations, and obviously they know how to run the machines. We don't, but it changes people's opinion and an outlook. I wish every woman that was pregnant could see their baby moving around on an ultrasound machine, because, and a lot of them do, they go to the hospitals, they go to the doctors, and they see it, but it really changes things. So that's one of the things that we do, and that's our Culture of the Life program.
It's
and
a very persuasive tool.
Yeah, it really is a very persuasive tool. So you know, I'm proud of that.
I read that as of December 2016, the Knights of Columbus funded and placed 752 ultrasound machines valued at more than $36 million in 50 states, as well as in Canada, Jamaica, Guatemala, and Peru.
True.
So this is what I'm talking about. The Knights don't just contribute to the rhetoric of a problem and give lip service to, you know, to their philosophy and their values. They put tangible, constructive, practical means in there, you know, like giving the, holding a fair and a weekend for the mentally challenged, actually giving their parents constructive help. You know, you're aiding them in raising this child by giving them something to do on a weekend. It's beautiful.
And something else, too, I think, you know, you mentioned how the younger generation seems to be coming more pro-life. I think ultrasound machines have a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
Technology just proving to all of us that there very much is life in the womb without question.
No, I worked in a clinic here in Orange County, the OBRIA organization, a fine women's health organization, pro-life. And I saw the difference that ultrasounds made, and the fact that the radiologists would come and volunteer their time to administer the ultrasound. And then to just visibly, I don't think they ever walked out of there with any more intent to have an abortion after they saw the ultrasound.
That's exactly right. Yes, exactly right.
So thank you for that huge contribution that you have made to that. You also work with young people. I love to see the Knights out there working in the playground with our youth ministry programs at the parish, or in the grammar schools with the basketball competition, the hoop contest, right?
Yeah. We do basketball free throws. We want to let the children in the schools really see and get involved with what the Knights do, and we get them at a young age because the parents come and watch them at doing basketball free throw, and we give them trophies and so on and so forth, and that is very exciting. We also do poster contests at all the different schools, and it's amazing when you see the kids so excited and they come there, and the parents know the Knights of Columbus are putting this on. So that's what we want. We want a good positive attitude around the community from the Knights of Columbus. We're getting that by having these kids' programs to help them be stimulated and doing different projects. And it's just, it's very exciting and it's very fun.
Now we got another message on our Facebook page. This is turning out to be kind of an effective means of communication. I like talking to people live, but it's
the workaround.
Thank you for taking the time to write down your question. So we have a message from Jim, who is listening live on his Catholic radio station, KRCD in Dubuque, Iowa. He said, last year at this time, there was zero major media coverage of the March for Life in D.C. Coverage didn't start until all these buses bringing the kids home got stuck in the snowstorm. All the local stations had to carry stories about the stuck buses and why the kids had gone to D.C. in the first place. Eventually, the mainstream media had to pick up on these stories because there were so many of them. I mean, that's really cool. You know, the fact that the March for Life is covered so minimally by the media, and yet they had to cover this because the buses were stuck. And we have another message that's coming in. We have Matt, our marvelous call screener, is having to utilize other resources here, whiteboards and
we're using Morse code
and sign language and all that kind of stuff. Have you ever participated in any of the March for Life?
Jim? Oh yeah, several of the March for Life. They're very stimulating to really get you aware of what the Culture of Life is and the March for Life is, and to see how many people at the LA March alone. It is just, it's mesmerizing. It's a shame that we take a snowstorm, though, to get publicity in the one in Washington, D.C.
It's Our Lady of the Snow. She said, okay, let me take this one. I got this for you guys. I know how to get this covered. You know, I think part of the problem with the pro-life demeanor, the pro-life disposition, is that we're afraid to vocalize it. We sort of think, I'm so embarrassed to sort of be pro-life. I'm so sort of embarrassed to have this philosophy because people don't understand. People don't get it. They think it's very archaic. But when you go to these kinds of March for Life marches and walks, you see all the people in solidarity with you. Every kind of person, old, young, men, women, children. We're not alone. And there is strength in our numbers. And do the Knights actually have specific presence at these things? Do they march in the parade?
Oh, absolutely. We go to all these marches. We want to show our presence. We wear our little outfits, and some of the color guard men come with their hats and et cetera. And it's very stimulating. And you know, the other thing that we're doing, Peg, is we put ultrasound machines in mobile homes.
Oh.
And the mobile home travels around to different locations, maybe an abortion center. And where they do abortions, maybe they might do other things besides abortions in that center, but we will have an ultrasound machine in a motor home, a big, nice motor home, where the women can come before they go in to have the abortion and they see it. And you would be amazed at the percentage of women who don't go in to get the abortion after they see it in this motor home. So we can use that motor home and drive it around different locations. And that is very effective.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Hey, so Jim, do you find that priests are on board with the Knights mission?
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, my. Most priests are Knights. For example, next Friday, what we have and we do every year, which is really an exciting evening, we have what we call our clergy night. And we have, maybe somewhere between 90 and 100 priests are there. And we have, 350 to 400 knights are there, and their wives and their kids can come.
For sure.
And we serve a dinner, and we show our appreciation to all the priests in Orange County for all they do for us. Because priests sacrifice so much, you know, to become a priest. And we tell everybody there that without them, we tell these priests, I have them all stand up. And we look them all in the eye and say, without you, we'd be lost.
They get a little scared when we look them right in the eye, too. They think they're going to start hearing confessions. No, it's great. And, you know, the priests respond. They participate. They love coming and being honored. And, Jim, one thing that you have a message that resonates throughout your conversation all the time is how we need to appreciate our priests more.
Right.
And I think that the Knights do that. Interestingly, we got another comment on our Facebook page, and I can't quite see the context of all of this message that came from one of our listeners. And thank you, whoever this is, for taking the time to do that. But they were suggesting that these small mass kits might be a wonderful gift to give priests, raise money for small mass kits so that priests can travel. I don't know the context of that, whether their local Knights chapter did do that, but they're saying this caller is saying that these portable mass kits about the size of a small suitcase are really popular gifts for priests to take to rest homes and hospitals, and that it would be a nice fundraiser to have, or another way that the Knights could support the work of priests. Maybe right. They do in different parts of the country.
Well, they do. They already do that.
And, okay, maybe that's what this caller is trying to tell
me. Right. Because it, you know, there's a lot of people locked up in hospitals and have, I was just telling you about a good friend of mine that's got some real health issues, and it's nice that the priest can go and do his spreading the word with his mass kits, and that's what they can do.
Yeah. So tell me what goes on in the meetings for a Knight of Columbus. Do you just do business, or do you have some sort of confidential prayer rituals?
No, we really don't.
No mystique there.
No,
huh?
No. There's no. Everybody thinks the Knights of Columbus is just this, my wife even says that, a secret organization. Well, it really isn't. It's just that it's a men's organization. So people think, you know, if you're not a knight, you can't come to a meeting, which you can't. So what we do is we always open our meetings with a prayer. We always have a priest there. And he opens with a little advice on, you know, spreading the word and trying to make your life a little bit better. And then we talk about all the councils and how they're bringing in new knights, what they're doing with membership and what they're doing to spread the word and who we're helping and et cetera.
You know, I love the fact that John Paul II called the Knights of Columbus the strong right arm of the church. It's just sort of a nice masculine image, I think.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that that knights do that are specific to their parts of the country? Like here, we do have a coat drive, but we don't, and this winter we do need coats. But I imagine in other parts of the country, they have sort of specific regional interests. And can you do anything as a Knight of Columbus chapter, or do you have to follow a prescribed set of, these are the ministries you can choose from?
Oh, no. We always have ideas, like warm coat drive we do, homeless people that don't have anything. We collect coats and we give them in this part of the country, and they do that in a lot of the part of the country, in the north anyway, the Knights. But we do, you're not restricted at what you can do.
Okay, so
as long as you're helping your church and you're helping people in need, that's what the Knights do. So a lot of them come up with their own ideas. One of the things that a lot of them do is they go to people's houses that maybe the house is having problems, so they might put in a new heater.
They might rebuild
the house. They might just fix the windows.
So if there's a parish that has a strong, dominant elderly population, they might do something to serve that segment of the parish.
Oh, no question. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
They also have a couple of places where they build houses and put people in there that don't have any place to live. So, I mean, some of the stuff that the Knights do is so amazing. Yeah. It's just hard to believe.
Let me ask you if you know this question. Why Columbus? Why did you choose Columbus as the patron? Or why did Father McGivney choose Columbus as the patron?
He was a Catholic.
Columbus,
yeah.
Spaniard.
He was exploring the world, and he came over here. He obviously discovered the United States, and we figured that why not get somebody who was a good example? I mean, we could have picked Jesus, but he was already our leader.
Knights of Jesus. Well, and why knight? I think originally it was Sons of Columbus, wasn't it? That sounds kind of like an Italian eating organization, actually.
Yeah.
But Knights of Columbus, they changed it because they wanted a little more regal image.
Right, right. Well, for some people have never seen the word before. It's not spelled N-I-G-H-T-S.
Oh.
It's K-N-I-G-H-T-S. So if you think about a knight, you know, in the old days, the knights were the guys that were going to maybe save people and save areas.
Protected the pilgrims
their
way to the Holy Land.
So that's kind of where that comes from, the knights. I know there's somebody probably listening right now said knights. Why don't they call them mornings, you know?
The afternoon of Columbus. Afternoons of Columbus. So, Jim, if one of our listeners would like to join a Knight of Columbus group and they don't see it very visible in their parish, what would you advise them to do?
I'd say go online and do a search, Knights of Columbus, and you'll find a local group close to wherever you are in this country.
So they'll list all the different chapters.
Yeah, okay. They'll be listed. And if you don't find it, you just go and ask your priest, where can I join the Knights of Columbus? And he'll know.
Hopefully he'll know.
He'll
now,
know.
I know our pastor, Father Cary Ballew, is
right.
a Knight of Columbus, and
right.
so is our newest priest, Father Brendan.
Right, exactly.
It's just excellent examples of Christian manhood. I love it. Are you convinced, Jimmy G, you're going to sign up?
Peggy's giving me that look. Like, come on, Jimmy G.
Well, we shared our spiritual New Year's resolutions earlier in the year, and I was going to ask do a little checkup on that, see how we're doing. You could ask me, I could ask you, but we don't have time for that today. But I would say, you know, this might fit in with some of your New Year's resolutions.
I'm open. Yeah.
Okay, leave the application form. Hey, Jim Brucken, thank you for your noble, important work as president of the Orange County Knights of Columbus. God bless your future efforts with the outstanding organization. And, you know, I want to also call to the attention of our listeners that when I went to meet Jim Brucken down in the lobby, he stood up and he was carrying his rosaries. He was saying his rosaries. He's always got – that's a great tool for a knight, right? Much
well,
better than the sword.
You definitely learn how to say rosaries when you're a Knight of Columbus, no question. And as I was telling Peggy when she first came down, I said I went to a football game in Los Angeles, a college football game, and somebody said, how long did it take you to get there with the traffic? And I says, it was 3.5 rosaries. So
almost got to the fourth set of mysteries, but didn't quite finish that one. No, but you are such a model for spiritual manhood and a beautiful example to the men and women, all who meet you in our parish and beyond. And I think you've made an impression on Jimmy G. So thank you. God bless your efforts. Hey, in a minute, we'll be chatting with Catholics as I take my microphone to a gathering of local knights and ask them what drew them to this service that our friend Jim Brucken has been talking to us about. Thank you again, Jim.
Thank you, Peggy. Thanks for being what you are and a good Catholic. And your whole family is a good example. Thank you.
God bless you. We're going to be right back. I am Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Well, hey there. Welcome back to Call Me Catholic. I'm Peggy Normandin, and we are proud to salute the Knights of Columbus on our show today, both for the work they do to defend the sanctity of life, especially the lives of the unborn, but their charitable work in so many other arenas. It's the largest fraternal organization within our Catholic Church, nearly 2 million members. Well, I spoke to a few of those members when I dropped in on one of their gatherings at Our Lady Queen of Angels Parish here in the Diocese of Orange, and I asked these fine men what drew them to this organization, and here's what they said.
Call Me Catholic. We're chatting with Catholics.
I'm walking into a Knights of Columbus gathering at Our Lady Queen of Angels Parish in the Diocese of Orange, and I'm hoping to speak to a few of the men before their meeting begins, because, of course, as a woman, I cannot attend the meeting, and I totally respect that. But I'd like to chat with a few of them about what drew them to this great Knights of Columbus organization and what types of ministries they most enjoy doing with the Knights. Let's see if they'll let me in. So what brought you into the Knights, and what do you enjoy most about it?
Well, it's a terrific fraternity, if you will, a brotherhood, and they do great charity work.
Anything in particular speak to your heart?
Well, yes, we're gathering, it's chilly right now, and we're gathering coats for the homeless.
I joined the Knights a little over a year ago. My wife and I were new to the parish and wanted an opportunity to meet some other men in the parish and get involved.
Has it been rewarding so far?
Absolutely. I've gotten exactly what I've signed up for.
What kinds of activities do they do here at the parish?
Helped out with the pancake breakfast, which is great.
Mmm, pancakes.
What is it about men making pancakes? It just seems like that's a partnership made in heaven.
Best about being the Knights is the camaraderie and helps us practice our faith.
Love this council because not only the work that the council does for the parish and the community at large, but also because of the people.
So it's just a social thing for you.
No, but it is great fellowship.
I joined the Knights back in 1994. And the reason I joined was to make a difference within my parish and community and everything, and really provide the vehicle. I've made some of my closest, friendships through the Knights and everything, and I've got a lot more involved with my church and my parish.
Well, what kinds of services does the Knights provide your parish?
Feeding the homeless, reaching out to other worthy causes out there in the community, helping out the youth ministry in the parish, maybe financing a bus trip or different things that they may need and everything.
Yeah, I love seeing the Knights get involved with the youth, because having these strong men of all ages just be kind of leadership models for them is really impressive, and it makes a difference for them.
Yeah, I mean, the Knights is kind of the goal is to be an example for the parish and the community and for the youth.
And that men can have their faith and still be masculine.
Yeah.
And live out their faith, you know what I mean, though?
No, exactly. Yeah.
So I'm a new addition to the Brotherhood.
Okay, so what drew you to the Knights?
So I just went through RCIA last year and converted to Catholicism in March. And I always like to take the next step and find something that's bigger than myself. And seeing the Knights and the work that they do, not just for the parish, but for the community at large, is remarkable. And I want to continue on my faith journey and continue to grow as a Catholic.
You guys really have a good time at this thing.
Oh,
I think it's the fellowship and then also looking for ways to make a contribution in the parish.
Okay, well, first of all, it gives me an active part in my faith without, just being a passive parishioner sitting in the pew.
Yeah, just fulfilling the minimum requirement.
Plus, some of the work that we do is really, really important, very touching, like the work we do for the intellectually disabled and the handicapped. And, being with those people and the gratitude that they show towards us is really an afternoon that you can't experience unless you do it. And the Knights provide the opportunity and the venue for doing that.
Well, it's a way of really living out your faith.
We have a lot of really professional people here. We have a lot of doctors and lawyers.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of great guys here, and so it's wonderful to get a chance to hear their stories and to talk to them and meet them and work with them.
Any particular ministry or?
Well, I like the ID drive. I think that's a great one. It's the intellectually disabled. And then I especially like working with the youth group. My wife and I did that a lot when our kids were here.
Well, I joined for the Brotherhood and also the Charitable Action. Been working a lot with youth ministry, having chaperones at events or helping out with new ideas or.
How hard is that to be a chaperone? You have to get kind of tough?
No, our kids.
You're pretty young, so I bet you go easy on it.
I do, but, the kids around here are really great. You don't have to put too much discipline into them.
And we help all the ministries of the church, so there's plenty of things to do and pick from.
You're generous in your volunteer hours to this parish. You really are.
Thank you.
Tell me why you're a Knight, what activities in the Knights you are particularly drawn to, you really enjoy.
Sure. Well, free throw contest once a year. We also have a soccer kickoff contest once a year, and we ask all the children of the parish to come to that contest. And then there's a grading level, and the people that win usually win a basketball or a soccer ball.
And then they can go on to the next level.
And they go on to the next level, to the state, and then eventually to international. Last year, we had one of our kids went to the state, and he won the state.
Well, that's good, wholesome competition, too. And I see you're also the chef here. You're the chief cook and bottle washer, I think.
Mmm, pancakes.
My wife got me
making homemade spaghetti.
Wow, this looks fantastic.
And so I do it for the knights, and I think it's a good way for all the knights and hopefully their wives to come and eat dinner before our meeting.
I did not think wives were invited. I'm standing here in the back very shyly.
Well, wives cannot be in the official knights' meetings.
Right.
But before the meeting, we can certainly have women. And
you guys are having plenty of fun without us.
There's also an auxiliary of the knights that are for the female gender. I believe it's called the Columbianettes. They're throughout the United States, so we're trying to develop that here.
Right? Yeah, these guys are having way too much fun. I'm getting out of here right now. Hey, join your local Knights of Columbus organization. It's outstanding. Join us again next week, same time, same day, for more good news from our good faith. Until then, I'm Peggy Normandin, but you can call me Catholic.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.